Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and the first hour is going to be a pleasure, at least for me anyway, and that's because, once again, we welcome Steve Probst, and we all owe Steve a debt of gratitude, those of us who love obscure R&B oldies and soul, not only because of his love of it as well, but more to the point because of all of his books that are enthralling to those of us who care about this stuff, that are preserving history that I have a feeling, other than Steve's books, in many cases, this would be lost to history. More artists than you can imagine. And one of them is probably little Julian Herrera. So, Steve, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, thanks a lot for the build-up. Now it's up to me, right?
Well, no, I mean, you know, I was thinking about it earlier, and your books are a pleasure to read, but there are so many things that you'll find in them that you're just not going to see anywhere else. And, you know, we always talk about how when we pass, it'll all be gone. And the reality is that a lot of things that were in L.A. R&B vocal groups, 1945 to 1965, would be gone if it weren't for your research.
Well, yeah, and I hope a few people are interested in it, and let's keep that population going and get some more people maybe picking up on it. That's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, you reissued what was the first rock and roll record, and that's such a wonderful book because it can start arguments from here to Kingdom Come, and it can it can be an entire night of fun.
Yeah, and it allowed me to understand that you can't stand Les Paul and Mary Ford records.
Well,
I bet you have one or two in your collection.
Absolutely, I do. And, you know, in many ways, Les Paul was incredibly talented, and not to take anything away from them, but I would just never consider them rock and roll. Therein lies the problem.
So. Yeah, I think you're right. It's sort of a weird mixture of country and word jazz or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we're not here to talk about that.
No, but although it is interesting, yeah, but you know, as I was saying last time, we kind of touched on little Julian Herrera, and to his credit, he doesn't have a Wikipedia page. I loved that, and I think it's absolutely appropriate that he doesn't have a Wikipedia page. But
now somebody's going to change that tonight.
Probably
what you're saying.
No, you're probably entirely right. Maybe it'll be rejected, but we'll get into the mystery later. But I'll first ask: you've certainly done follow-up research. Did we ever find him?
Nobody I know that has been looking for him has found him, although certain people that are no longer with us claim to have found him, but they're not talking. But there's one thing for sure. He wants nothing to do with his past fame and lack of fortune and misfortune. He just wants to go on his merry way and not... And go by his given name. And you know what his given name is.
Ron Gregory. And we'll get to that as far as that goes. But
Ronald Wayne Gregory.
Yeah, well, that's right. The middle name Wayne. Doesn't that say it all? But it's interesting. The first time I actually heard of little Julian Herrera, other than the record, which, of course, you know, Lonely, Lonely Nights and all that, was Huggy Boy introducing him, saying he's been away a year and a day. And I didn't realize at the time that that was a euphemism for he just got out of jail.
And, so, and now he's back to stay.
Right. That's right. Exactly. And I had to ask him, well, what is that? Oh, jail. But now that's interesting, too. So let's back up and say we all thought we knew little Julian Herrera, and it was Johnny Otis who first discovered him, if you will. And I guess it was on Dig Records that those Lonely, Lonely Nights came out in 56. When was it? Was it the first time they discovered he was Ron Gregory? And I should also interject that there used to be a big jock afternoon drive on WoWo in Fort Wayne named Ron Gregory. And every time I'd hear about it, well, what do you think? No, it turned out it wasn't. But in
not
obviously.
Him. No.
Yeah.
How he came by the name is of interest.
Yeah.
And I think it was Johnny Otis that told the story. At the time, the big romantic hit of the day, the chart topper, was not Earth Angel. That came about 2 years earlier. It was Heaven in Paradise by Don Julian. Now, Johnny Otis decided he needed a Don Julian type of singer, so he picked out the name Julian to replicate the success or to, feed off the success that Don Julian was having. And so that's how the name Julian came about. I would imagine the surname Herrera was from the family that had taken him in East L.A. I have no better explanation for that, but the name Julian came from Don Julian.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Heaven in Paradise.
That is great. But I didn't, Ron Gregory is his name, but it turned out when they looked at his history, he was a Hungarian Jewish guy, I assume born in America, but as far away from East L.A. as you could get.
And from Massachusetts. Yeah. A friend of mine, David Reyes, called me yesterday, of all things, and told me, and he didn't even know we'd be talking about this, but told me a friend of his had sent him a newspaper clipping. Remember Paul Coates' Confidential File?
Yes.
Well, Paul Coates wrote a short column on little Julian Herrera after he had started doing his time, and little Julian drew a blank about who he interviewed. Little Julian, he interviewed little Julian's girlfriend, not the girl that got him in all that trouble, but a different girl. By the way, the name of the girl, I'm not going to give her full name, but her first name was Linda. So when little Julian sang, I remember Linda, he wasn't kidding.
Oh, my God, yes. And, of course, the Linda label, and now we're getting into Eddie.
Then we're getting into Eddie Davis.
Yeah, and that's a soap opera, to be sure. Some of which you could tell, sadly, because he's been gone now about 25 years.
Oh, but great guy, though.
Loved
Eddie.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and
him and Billy Cardenas sort of reunited on my show. That was the first time they'd been together since they had a split decades earlier. In fact, it was David Reyes who wrote a book called Land of a Thousand Dances that told me that was he set up them to meet on my show on KLON back in the 80s, and I had no idea they had that bad breakup, but it was Eddie and Billy sort of making nice to each other on my show and talking about how their various labels came about, or how Eddie's labels came about. So, but that, like you say, it's a different story. But man, the East LA story is something else.
Oh, it is, and it's just fascinating how much came out of that, and also so many unsung heroes. Like, I think the first record that Eddie Davis actually produced was The Romancers, "My Heart Cries," and I've always wondered, is that true? By the way, you might know if it is or not.
Tell me again. There was a little glitch in my line.
The Romancers, "My Heart Cries."
Oh, The Romancers?
Yeah.
Not sure. Let me change. I think it could have been The Atlantics.
Okay.
But I can't be... Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I'd always heard it was The Romancers. I don't know. But, of course, I loved "My Heart Cries." I had no idea in the beginning that actually it was a cover of a B-side of Etta and Harvey. And, and what a wonderful song. But, I mean, I remember when that came out, it was just, it was just great. And, of course, everything since then. But back to little Julian Herrera. So here he is. He's in the 50s. And, I assumed he was just a guy from East L.A. I had no reason to doubt it. And here comes Huggy Boy. He's been away a year and a day. By the way, he was convicted of rape, not statutory rape. How did he only do a year? I've never understood that.
I think he only did 6 months.
Oh,
I have some of the court transcript. And they didn't come down too hard on him, euphemistically speaking.
Yeah, so to speak.
It was, I think they were trying to put some of the onus on the girl. It's always the case, the girl enticed him, and they were all drunk, and he was drinking vodka, et cetera, et cetera. But he didn't do that. I don't think he did that much hard time.
Yeah, because I remember there were like three defendants, and two of them got charged with statutory rape, and he got charged with rape. And I thought, well, rape, that's going to be a long time. And it wasn't.
No, not in 1958, it wasn't.
No. So he came.
It happened, but he had done three records by then. Those Lonely Nights, Symbol of Heaven, which is his second and final one for Johnny Otis's Dig label.
Right.
And then he did the one-off for Art LeBeau, I Remember Linda, which was became a classic, and you know, didn't hurt Art LeBeau's bank account much at all, because
no.
those were all big hits.
Oh, absolutely, big East LA hits for sure. And of course,
I mean,
Art would put them on stage too. So you know, he got the proceeds from the deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, Symbol of Heaven, the flip side, Here in My Arms. Yeah, these were not bad records. They re-released Lonely Nights, I think, in like '63 or something. So
that was not a reissue. That was he redid it. There was
really?
A band out of Long Beach called The Illusions that performed at the New Pike, and they were called into a session. They had no idea what they were who they were going to be backing. And here's little Julian Herrera in a soundproof booth, and he wasn't at all friendly with the guys, but he was singing, and they were backing him up, and they were promised payment, and they didn't get the payment, and they went to their manager and said, "What gives?" And then the manager ended up in a mental hospital, so that was the end of
well,
that management deal.
I always wondered what Esser Records was, as far as that goes, because that was the label on the reissue. And it looked like, you know, Esser? Can't imagine
SR.
Who that was. Yeah.
Esser. And the flip side was I Want to Be With You, which
right.
was an old Earl Curry and the Blenders song
right.
on R&B.
But yeah, ESSAR, and I had their address, of course, but other than that, I have no idea if any other record ever came out on this label.
Oh, yeah, there was a Surf record. There were several records on SR, like you say, ESSAR.
Yeah.
That was the initials of the owner, Steve, and I forget his last name. He actually put a sort of a talking poem over that over a pre-recorded background and issued it under his name on
okay.
SR.
Okay.
I have it somewhere.
yeah.
Talk about one-of-a-kind records.
To say
anyway,
the least.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on right now as far as the East L.A. scene is concerned.
All right, well, hang on one minute. Don't go away, because I do want to talk about that. And
okay.
we will get back
All
to
right.
little Julian Herrera, too, but I'm fascinated to know there still is an East L.A. scene, and that is terrific. But if you're listening to this show, the one thing I know about you is you love radio, or you would have given up a long time ago and listened to something else. And if you do love radio, you should love the C. Crane Company, because years ago, Bob Crane was as disgusted as the rest of us with the quality of reception in the radios that were being made, and he thought, I could do better. And boy, did he. And today, it is a company that has a number of radios, all with one commonality. They just have terrific reception. Now, I like the CC Radio 2E. It's my bedside companion, because it's got a dial light and a clock and an alarm and a timer and some presets, and that's all good, but that's not the real deal. Here's the deal. You take the CC Radio 2E, you take your average AM radio, you tune to a weak station on your average radio, then tune to the same station on the CC Radio 2E, and it will sell itself, because it will blow it out of the water. And it's designed to receive long range, that twin coil ferrite antenna, but not only AM, FM as well. The idea is to make weak signals stronger. And the 2E also gets weather with weather alert, so that makes it an emergency radio as well. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Take a look at the CC Radio 2E. I think you will be pleased. As I say, that's my bedside companion. John likes the CC Radio 3 because it's got a Bluetooth capability as well, but you can look at them both, actually. But if you can't go online, they've got terrific customer service. Call them, 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, this catalog is not only great products, it's a repository of radio information as well, and I think you're going to like it. You look at that CC Radio 2E, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Still remember, still remember. You. I like
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yep, Johnny Otis and Art LeBeau wrote it, and little Julian Herrera sang it on the Starla label, Don't You Know. And we're talking to Steve Propes, and I've always got links to his pages on Amazon, because, man, these books are just terrific. All right, so we remember Linda. We remember, of course, Julian Herrera, who we'll get back to him, no doubt, because for people who have no idea who he is. And for people who have no idea who he is, we'll kind of have to start at the beginning. But you were enticing me, very successfully, I might add, with the idea of what was happening in East L.A. today. So tell me.
Well, a new book. It's called, it just came out today, in fact. It's called The Dreamy Side. And what the author does, his name is Ruben Molina, who's written... total of three books. I don't know if you've run across the name.
Sure.
But what he does is, at the same time, he has an overview of R&B as was popular in the Hispanic community, and combines it with, any collector will tell you that now and again they come across a record that's has placa design, handwritten sort of outsider art,
right,
by guys that are in certain street gangs in East L.A., and they put the information about their affiliation and members of the gang and that sort of thing on the record, on the record sleeve. So what he did is he made it his I carry through on an idea to find as many of these records and connect them to as many East L.A. street gangs as possible and put it in a book. So it's illustrated with that kind of art, and it's just fascinating. It's one of a kind, and it documents two things at one time: the East L.A. Collector orientation, lots of ballads, and connecting it up to the history of gangs, starting with the Clover Gang, which was the turn of the 20th century. They started up in the early 1900s, so it's a work you won't find anywhere else. And the author, I commend him for this. It was an original idea. I've come across records with, gang-oriented art, drawings on sleeves and on the labels themselves, but he took the extra step to sort of organize it and show what organizations, shall we say, connected with what particular songs.
Okay, so here's the thing. I immediately, while we were talking, said, I'm going to go ahead and order this book. I can't find it. All right?
Yeah, Ruben Molina, you can find him on Facebook. He just got copies today.
Okay.
He got 500 copies, and they're going to go quick.
Yeah, all right. So now I have to look for that, because I know when I tried researching it, it did come up with the Midnighter's Facebook page, and it mentioned about how he started the project so that he could better understand our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents' generation and all that. Sounded fascinating, but went there and, of course, couldn't find anything about the book. So Ruben has his own Facebook page, does he?
Okay. Yeah, you'll find it there. It won't be that difficult.
Okay.
Even if I could find it, you can find it.
Right, exactly. And here we are. Understood. Okay, Ruben Molina is at Mr. Rosewood in Norwalk. Oh, very, very good. All right, so I see the book. He says, tomorrow I will be at the doo-wop breakfast at Mr. Rosewood's in Norwalk. Hopefully he didn't sell out. All right, so maybe I can find a way online on Facebook to actually order this book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Then hold on. Don't go away. We're going to hear
okay.
the news, and then I'll hopefully come back and tell you I successfully ordered the book. All right. So more with Steve Propes coming up on WGN Radio.
There's been some lonely, lonely nights. Maybe years since you've been gone. Lay my head. Cried all night long. The things you used to say to me, I thought that we would never part. Yes, you know I love you. if you would only come back home. I wouldn't be so all alone.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is little Julian Herrera, or Ron Gregory, depending. And we'll get to that, too. But yes, 1956 on Dig. And we're talking to Steve Propes, who just told us all about the dreamy side. And finally, it took until literally seconds ago, I found an address to send him a check for $46, including shipping and handling.
So, to the United States, it probably costs double that to send it anywhere around the world. But actually, you played Johnny Guitar Watson, Those Lonely, Lonely Nights.
Oh,
that
God.
Was what we heard.
Oh, God, I did. Sorry. Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, well.
Great record.
Yes.
I mean, I never get tired of Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah.
But
you're right. You're absolutely. I just looked. All I was doing was looking for the Lonely Nights. And yes. Oh, my God. All right. Well.
Well, it's okay. So it gives us another opportunity to talk about Johnny Guitar Watson, or we can keep talking about Little Julian Herrera.
Yeah, no,
your choice.
We must talk about Little Julian Herrera because, of course, again, if people have no idea who this is, we're telling this story in bits and pieces. But firstly,
sure.
I will say for the dreamy side, 46, yeah, it's a lot of money, but if you're into our stuff, it's nothing. And I'll put the address on Raleigh.net after the show, and, of course, a link to Steve's wonderful books on Amazon. All right, so now with that in mind, so here's little Julian Herrera, and I guess kind of Johnny Otis's discovery, which is interesting in and of itself because Johnny Otis was upfront about it, but he was a white guy, a Greek guy, living a life as a black guy, basically. And
yeah,
so,
well, he grew up in a black neighborhood.
Yeah,
identified with the scene that was going on in the Bay Area, and went to Omaha for a short while and ended up in L.A. in the early 1940s when there was all this disruption because Little Tokyo was being evacuated and a black population was forming there. So there was all sorts of activity going on in the black community, and Johnny Otis sort of made his mark as a band leader, and nobody bothered to wonder what his ethnic background was at the time.
And nor did it matter. I mean, after all, the music is colorless, so that's terrific. But yes, and of course, we could do months on Johnny Otis and not run out of material. But so how?
Oh, great!
How did
great
he?
Guy.
Yeah.
You know, he started a label called Dig This Record.
Uh-huh.
He put out 4 45s on it. Called the squires who were basically Don and Dewey, called them the Blue Jays, and covered hits of the day because he saw Topps Records and Broadway Records was making a fortune covering hits of the day with unknown artists, so he decided to jump on that bandwagon, and when that petered out, he just took the name Dig This Record and took off this record, and, well, you know, presto, we got Dig Records.
Yeah.
And then it ties into the magazine. And I think he licensed the logo to Dig Magazine, not the other way around. Man, that's a long sentence.
No, but that's also terrific as far as that goes. So here again, we've got Johnny Otis, who by the time little Julian Herrera, who, like you say, he was a runaway who wound up being taken in by a family in Boyle Heights. And
his mother died when he was really young. He told Paul Coates a few things about his story. You know, Paul Coates was very anti-rock and roll. He was sort of he had Confidential File, which is sort of based on the idea of Confidential magazine.
Right.
He tried to find a scandal under every rock. And he booked Johnny Otis one time on his show so he could tear rock and roll apart. And he gave Johnny Otis a script and said, this is what your conversation will be. And Johnny Otis said later with that and didn't do the show.
Yeah, exactly. Why would he? So
kidding. So that's the Paul Coates meets Johnny Otis story. But Paul Coates did this story on little Julian Herrera. He had a girlfriend. His when his mother died, his father took him in. She had a new wife. the new wife none of them got along, so he left the new wife, said to little Julian, "You're coming with me," and then promptly disappeared. What a way to bring up a family, huh?
Yeah, and he was, 11 years old or something? Very young.
Something like that. He got arrested when he was 19. He had just, I think he was three records into his career, and that was the end of it. You know, Huggy Boy told me he booked little Julian Herrera on that, he's been away for a year and a day, and 3,000 people showed up. He booked little Anthony and about 150 people showed up, so that shows.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, here's little Julian Herrera, and he was a local legend. Again, wouldn't have meant anything outside, probably, of East L.A. and a few other simpatico places. But, you know, he was a king. Now, I find it fascinating how we discovered he was Ron Gregory.
How did we discover that?
The cop showed up. With his picture, looking for him. And Ronald Wayne Gregory. He's like, no, that's not Ronald Wayne Gregory. That's little Julian Herrera.
Right. One and the same. But Ronald Wayne Gregory doesn't quite have the selling panache that little Julian Herrera does on the tip. R&B label, so
yeah, beyond question there. But here he was, and yeah, we know he went away, he comes back year and a day and all that stuff, but do we have any idea why he disappeared for good?
Well, I think you mean after his final record?
Yeah.
He had a record on the MO label, EMMO,
right.
Which is a big sought-after record. Very few people have that. And that recently went for some pretty convincing bucks. Why he disappeared from the recording scene, I think...
Yeah, well, not only the recording scene, from the planet. I mean, all we have about what happened to this guy is rumor. I don't know anybody who actually knows for sure what happened to this guy.
Yeah, the rumors include ending up in Tijuana.
Right.
People in San Diego claim to have run across him, but those rumors didn't pan out, that he lives in Southgate. This friend of mine I told you who passed away, his name was Steve, mm-hmm. how's that, said he ran into him at I think it was a Midnighter show, and little Julian didn't want to talk about his singing career. He would... You know, he'd exchange words with Steve, but any talk about how he got to be who he was off limits. So I think it was just, maybe he recorded for the wrong people who didn't really treat him well. I mean, Art LeBeau based a lot of his catalog on that one record, but he never recorded. I think there was one other song recorded in Art LeBeau's files. It was never an unissued track, and I don't know what the disposition of that, because, you know, Art LeBeau, closed up, fenced off and original sound records,
right.
And kept all the stock. All the stock was inside the building in West Hollywood,
right.
And they hired guards and put fences around the building so people wouldn't break in. And then some people figured out how to, bribe the guards. And a lot of stuff was, including Art LeBeau's divorce decree from Starla.
Oh, that's great.
So a lot of water under that bridge.
Oh, sure. But, you know, the difference is that we know all about Art LeBeau, start to finish. And we really all know about Huggy Boy as well, maybe a more interesting story, but we know all about him. But here's little Julian Herrera, and we find out when the cop shows up at Johnny Otis's house saying, you know this guy? You know this Ron Gregory? No, but he's, Julian Herrera. And then he just flat out disappears.
Yeah. He was arrested on January 27th, 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And went on trial right away in February. It was pretty much taken care of. And, after he recorded with the Illusions, that was the rock and roll band that backed him on the remake of Lonely, Lonely Nights.
Okay.
He didn't, I guess he did. He did some live performances by through what's his name? The guy that discovered Ritchie Valens had the solo.
Oh, Bob Keane.
No. The musician. Why can't I think of his name? Because he's really a very helpful guy. Well, I'm drawing a blank. It's that time of night.
Yeah.
He appeared with he appeared on some live performances at small clubs, but didn't really, you know, they weren't really advertised.
Right.
Who knows?
And of course, I understand that musically from the standpoint of it's not too long after we're talking about this that here's the Beatles, and musically things are changing dramatically, and, you know, Carole becomes almost all Beatles all the time and all this stuff. So I can see why we'd have a discussion saying, you know, that was it for his career. But we're not talking about his career. He disappeared. You know, it's like he was taken to Neptune. We never heard of him dying. We don't know what happened.
Oh, by the way, the person that he appeared with was Gil Roca.
Oh, yeah, right.
O-C-H-A.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gil Roca had the band, the Silhouettes, that Ritchie Valens sang with. And he, you know, it was Bob Keane's operative that saw Ritchie in a show in the San Fernando Valley and invited him to the label. And Gil Roca was, cut off at that. But Gil Roca continued on with his band, and Little Julian sang with him from time to time.
Right.
Gil self told me that.
Yeah, and I assume Gil's no longer with us, but he had been in Lancaster for years and almost had a shrine to Ritchie Valens at his house and all that. And yeah, he would talk about, Julian Herrera, but again, we're talking about the earlier days.
You're right. Who he performed with, I guess he just didn't perform.
Yeah,
maybe he found religion. Maybe he,
Well, if I had to guess, he was murdered. That's
okay.
I swear to God. I mean, that would explain it, especially since he supposedly went to Tijuana and all that kind of stuff. But to completely disappear without a trace, he'd be in his early 80s by now if he were alive. I don't know what happened to the family in Boyle Heights, but I'm sure that they were interviewed and they know nothing, and on and on. And yeah,
okay. I'll tell you one little tidbit.
Yeah.
You know the musician Ry Cooter?
Sure.
He did a CD called Chavez Ravine.
Ooh, yes.
He hired an operative to try to find Little Julian Herrera to sing on a track on Chavez Ravine. And that operative, I don't know if she found Little Julian, but he didn't appear on the... That would have been a big deal if Little Julian Herrera had performed a song on Chavez Ravine.
Because
that was a best-selling CD, and it didn't happen. So there's another little, little.
Well, and that album is not that old, I don't think.
Oh, no, it was in the 90s, I think, or the 2000s.
Yeah, I think it was 2005 that came out.
Okay.
But if I'm right, and I could be, hell, I'm not even playing Little Julian Herrera, so what do you expect? Actually, I
Well, you know, take your pick, There's certainly not enough Julian Herrera music to satisfy either one of us, but we have what we have. I mean, there's not enough Ritchie Valens music. A lot of people you could say that about. And certain people, there's too much music.
Well, yes. Isn't that the damn truth? 100% in agreement there, too. I was so thrilled when Little Willie G started singing again. In fact, I thought about him because he was on Chavez Ravine on some stuff. But, it was years that he was gone, and I know there's an Eddie Davis tie into that, too.
Well, yeah, maybe Little Willie has a idea about Little Julian, since now that you mentioned he was on that CD, maybe he knows a little backstory about, how far Ry Cooter got in the process of locating Little Julian.
Yeah,
these are still questions I guess we can ask people that are, you know,
and if he doesn't,
crowd, as it were.
Yeah, deal is, if he doesn't, that gives more credence to my thought. He was murdered. So
okay.
That's where I'm going with this. All right, hang on a moment. We've got Steve Probst, and you know, I've been hugging him all night. If you do have a question, we've only got a few minutes left, but this is the man who knows everything about everything when it comes to soul and R&B and all the stuff you ask me, and I'm a piker compared to Steve. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh, and we will hear Lonely Lonely Nights actually by Little Julian Herrera, I hope, coming up on WGN Radio.
These lonely nights, lonely nights, can't go on since you've been gone. Though I've been around so long, please spare me these lonely nights.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, that's the 1956 version on Dig. I believe that's Dig 118. And we might get to SR after the news as far as that goes. But I've been hogging Steve, and I'll tell you, the one person I know who knows damn near as much is Stan and Dearborn. So, Steve, you will hopefully hear, assuming that I don't screw up the phones entirely, meet Stan and Dearborn. So let's see if we can do this. Can I do this? All right. So if I do that and do this, I can welcome Stan to WGN Radio. Are you there, Stan? Stan? No. Don't tell me I've lost. Steve, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I don't know where Stan went. And I
didn't see him either.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And he had a question for you, too. And I'm sure it was a really good question. And I don't know. I don't know why. Well, all right. I don't usually do this, but let me try and actually change phone banks and have you on the same one together and hope there's not a ton of feedback. But we'll find out in a moment. So, Stan, are you with us?
Yes. Hello,
right.
Raleigh.
And, Steve, are you still with us?
Right here.
All right. Go for it.
Okay, hi, Steve. I'm a collector mostly of East R&B and Midwest, and I'm pretty weak on the West Coast. But one of my favorite West Coast artists, Arthur Lee May, and the Crowns. And I heard at one time they backed up Mel Williams as the J.O.'s on Otis, and they had a couple records on Otis.
The J.O.'s did an album with Johnny Otis. That was another one where they covered a lot of hits of the day, At My Front Door and songs like that. The J.O.'s had one single on the Dig label called Tough Enough. Look for that on lists. If you can find that, you'll really be pleased with what the group came up with. Arthur Lee May was buddies with Richard Berry. They were good. They were very close friends. Arthur Lee May was a professional baseball player, too, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I got a chance to meet him in New Jersey.
Very nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had his baseball card. And,
very nice guy. They recorded a song called Gloria, which has nothing to do with the Cadillacs or, the Charles Brown song. It was for Gloria Jones, who was a member of the Blossoms. They were, very high on Gloria, so they did a song about her. It was credited to Arthur, but Richard Berry sang the bass on that. So that's, I don't know if you have that, but that's one to look out for.
Yes.
The one I can't find by Arthur Lee May is on the Flip label. The same label Richard Berry did Louie Louie on. Just cannot, that's a hard to find record. Speaking of Arthur Lee May, I did a Tony Valdez show on Channel 11 in LA, and he was looking for an original R&B singer because it was, I guess, Black History Month, and I contacted Arthur Lee May, and we did a TV interview with Tony Valdez, who's boy, I talk about East LA historian. Tony knew it all. He worked at a record store before he became a reporter for Channel 11 in LA. Boy, this goes all over the territory, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid you pretty much ended the hour. So Steve will join us next quarter. Usually he joins us quarterly. So Stan, I'll have to warn you in advance so that you can call, because I think you'll have a swell conversation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the information.
Absolutely.
And, good show.
All right. Thanks. And hopefully Stan's not hanging up entirely, because I've got you both tied into the same line, and you'll both be going at once. In any event, Steve, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. I'll get those links on Raleigh.net, and I really appreciate it. Thanks for all you do.
Let me know what you think of the book. Okay. Thank you, Raleigh.
All right. Bye-bye. Sounds great. Goodbye. Yes, and I will get that book too. So there. Going to send a check to Post Office Box 6074 tonight. All right, whatever's on your mind will be on What's Up Next, coming right here on WGN Radio.